The following podcast is not relating to my teachings and work at Del Cid Medical Center and is for entertainment purposes only. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Life of Flow podcast. Today, we had the pleasure to talk to Vinita Chandra, amazing surgeon, amazing person, professor of vascular surgery and professor of neurosurgery at Stanford. And today we had a deep dive into one of the things that we love and we hate, which is call. And what does that mean? And how do we feel about it? And how do we manage it? The painful late nights and the kind of exhilarating moments after. And I really love this episode. I think it kind of touches something that is very specific to us and kind of what we do as surgeons. It was a good one.
Let's do it.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
Vinita, thank you for being here. We go way back. The friendship and also the appreciation for the intellectual exchange throughout the years, the learning from each other has been great. I always preface that this podcast started in a bar, and although we're not necessarily drinking, it's 10 in the morning in Austin. But we try to make that conversation as easygoing as possible. And so anyway, today before the show, we had no idea what we were going to talk about. But we decided that we are going to share with you guys some of the most painful, but some of the most beautiful things that we go through as surgeons, which is the call and the endless hours during the night and how that affects us as we're, kind of like living through life. So anyway, Vinita, welcome. And thank you for agreeing to talk about some pretty difficult things that we have to do as surgeons.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And at least it's an easy topic because it's fresh, hot off the press in my mind, as you know, having just gone. It's always fun. We got a long, long history and always fun to spend some time with you. Nice to see you, Lucas.
Same.
So, when I started my surgical career, I did it in Costa Rica, and it was very, very different from what call in America is. Mm. We had Q4 call, mm-hmm. and it was the same team, and we, kind of like A, B, C, and D. So every 4 days we would rotate groups, and we'd be all night together, this group of, I want to say, probably seven of us. And so it was kind of like PGY ones, two, a couple of threes and a six. And then usually there was like a senior. And the entire night we were op and operating and without stop. Like you as an intern, so there was like these intern level surgeries. So we would focus on like the appendectomies, mm-hmm. and we didn't even have laparoscopy. So we were doing like open appies. We were also doing, gallbladder surgeries. We also had then like trauma cases would go like to the mid and senior, and then some of the more complex, general surgery, perforator, colectomy and stuff like that in the middle of the night with a cancer that would probably go to other people. But I look back at that at some of the most amazing, amazing times of my life. I was certainly full of youth and energy, and my mind was a sponge and my hands wanted to be in every cavity of that, of that person, obviously trying to do the right thing. But I don't look back at it and feel any animosity at all. What was your experiences as, if you can go back memory lane, in training your surgical first calls and how that was for you, and would you do it again, but do you look at it and do you think positive happy thoughts from that?
It's so funny that you say that, because as soon as you started talking about your early residency, I was thinking about mine. And I think this is potentially unique among surgeons, where, you know, it's crazy, calls crazy, but you just enjoy it so much. I mean, we were Q3 call. So I was either pre-call, post-call, or on-call. On-call was amazing. I mean, you're running around, you're crazy, you're exhausted, but you know everything, you get your hands in everything, similar to what you said. The part that just totally like shocks me now is that post-call was when we'd go party, because you got a party.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, you're about to go into like 36 hours of no sleep. So I would literally take call, never sleep, operate all night, go home, take a nap, get up and go party. And then kind of get up and do the whole thing again. And, you know, I agree. I'm not sure I would want to ever do it again, but I certainly think it is a special, you know, growth phase, a really fun phase, believe it or not, where I gained knowledge and, you know, grew up, became wiser and also had a lot of fun.
What was the name of the bar you guys would always go to after? Because I have to, in Puerto Rico, when I was doing med school, everybody would go to a place called La Neurona.
The Neuron.
Which, you know, okay, segues into your professorship of neurosurgery. And in Philly, at Temple, it was a place called The Well. And we would go and just get like endless meals. And it was like endless mimosas were like $16. So we would go after call and just have like mimosas until like 2 p.m. Yeah.
It's sort of a little bit of an absurd relationship, right? Because when you look back on it, I don't think any of us could do that, right? Well, I mean, there's absolutely no way I could substantiate myself putting my body through it, and my mind just isn't clear. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that there's a normalization of that, right? Mm-hmm. That it's almost like, hey, this is fine and it's okay. Is that the right thing to do? Like, should we encourage the balance to be less involving, you know, a relatively toxic, lethal substance as liquor? Because now, I'm not trying to be two-faced. Listen, I love my wines and I drink and I've drank and I've been drunk many times. But should we be a little bit more proactive about trying to create that balance of fun and work in a little different way now that we're, you know, we're all a little older, we're looking back, but we're teaching our residents that, like, what should we be doing? Should we be commemorating the fun every 2 days, or should we be trying to maybe get their minds around other ways to cope with the day to day?
We should be having fun. No, I'm kidding.
By the way, Benita, we're negotiating with a whiskey company that's
going to
pay for it. I'm not joking.
Yeah, we are.
Our first
sponsor will be a whiskey
company. First sponsor is a whiskey company.
Well, we don't know. We don't know yet. That's okay. Hold your horses.
I'll tell you about my Chivas Regal days, but that might be a conversation for a different day. But I think you're right. I mean, first of all, like, Q3 call is no longer there, you know, certainly having more healthy lifestyle and healthy habits. And I think the underlying aspect of the way we were, which is work hard, play hard, and I think that's part of a surgeon's culture for sure, is not, you know, is not to process, it's not to like, and like debrief and like take the time to, you know, go through. I mean, like, I'll just tell you, for example, I spent Monday and Tuesday many hours of both nights with the same patient, a patient that I spent hours and hours and hours to try to save his leg, and I failed, right? I didn't succeed. And, you know, I have to process that and unload that. And I think that we don't do a good job of that, and we don't train it or we don't teach it. So I agree. There's definitely better ways to do it. But it's also, you know, you're also young and in your like youthful, like, we want to be part of the world phase. And so it's hard to find that balance, I think, when you're in training without doing a little bit of that.
I don't think we need to do anything. I think this new generation does it by themselves. Like, I, you know, look at them and interact with them and I talk with them, and they seem very well balanced as compared to me. I
I don't know. I think I was
much better version.
I think they do a way better job than I did, for sure. Like 100%. Yeah.
Well, if you think about, I'm sorry, come again.
Just saying, they advocate for themselves so much better than we ever did. So I do think that's an amazing thing. I mean, I would never dream to say, you know, it would be helpful if we did this. You know, I would just, you know, I was told. And so I think that that's a really great cultural change, actually, among the younger generation.
If you look at the way that our professors were when they were residents,
it was crazier.
It was way crazier. I mean, I have gotten some of the craziest stories that I don't know that we should share, but about some of the stuff that went down in call, like during call and in the call room.
Watch what you're gonna say.
You want to get the show canceled.
Yeah.
But you know, so I guess there is this natural evolution, because although I feel like I worked a lot, it wasn't necessarily an uber irresponsible call behavior.
Yeah.
We did go out and we did party and we did drink on when we were off, but when we were there, we were working, which wasn't necessarily what the people that taught me when they were young were doing. And so I guess that there is some slow movement in the right direction.
But why do you think we romanticize it so much? Because I remember I was finishing fellowship and I go to some interview and the guy's like, oh yeah, I trained at Baylor too. And I was telling the Bakey stories, and the Bakey stories are something. So the guy says, yeah, on rounds, there's one person that had to have all the films. And if you didn't have them, the Bakey would fire you on the spot. So the guy goes down to the basement to get the films. The guy there is like having a break or saying, gives him an attitude. He tells me he jumps over the desk, basically, you know, physically assaults the guy, grabs the film himself and goes up. And he's telling this with like a, you know, smile on his face. Like, oh, that was the best moment of my life. And I was like, I don't know. Yeah. And we do that too. Like we kind of glamorize suffering and going through these hardships. It's kind of like the hero of a thousand faces. You have to conquer your dragons, but yeah, it's interesting.
One thing that I do feel is it does change significantly with time, right? And then you go, there's this metamorphosis where, like, why was it so much fun? And why? Let me go around the room. Is it fun to take call now?
No.
Is it fun?
Well, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it is. Sometimes when you get like,
I don't think it is.
When you get a rupture, I still get that. Okay, let's go.
It's the rush.
Yeah, the rush. Yeah.
It's fun when you get them off the table and you save their lives. I hear you. Like, you know, when you've done. But I don't know, man. I feel there now. It's not fun. No.
Yeah, I like the waiting on the head. So the helipad is at the top and then they come out with the elevator. So I just like, I know they're coming. I just like sit there just contemplating. And then I hear the helicopter. And I just start getting that feeling. I was like, okay, let's go. I don't know. I get that.
That's great. That just shows that you're early in your career.
Yeah, exactly.
That energy will fizzle slowly out.
Yeah.
And then you've had enough of them and you've battled enough of these things. But it takes a toll, I think. Why do you think now we don't like it? Why do you think right now it gets old, or it gets and is it something that we should all have? Like should I right now that I put myself in this situation where I don't take call and I seem to be very happy, am I potentially missing out on something that keeps me relevant? Or that I should be, you know, should this just be this capital punishment that as a surgeon I have to always live with some degree of call, and that just makes me are a, you know, strong surgeon? Or why do we put ourselves through these things? What's your thought on that?
Oh, you know, I think, you know, Miguel, if you have and maintain intellectual curiosity, the goal of, you know, good care, quality care, growth in terms of your care for your patients, which is you know, what, when you're training and when you're younger, you get a lot out of from call. Like, this is where I get my hands dirty and I roll up my sleeves. And so I think that's why it, that's why, you know, it's whether or not other people think it's fun, but it's more fun than it is when you're a little bit, you know, more seasoned and you've sort of been there and done that. And but I wouldn't say that I've seen it all or done it all by any means, right? I'm still would like to grow and do good things. And I think it's exhausting to do it in the call form. If I could do it in another form, as long as I'm maintaining that, I think I will be better. I don't know. That's kind of how I feel. So I don't personally, I mean, I'm still taking call. I have to. It's not a choice. I don't know, Miguel, how you manage this. But I think that's the important part of call. That's where a lot of the growth happens. And as long as you're maintaining that.
You think, I mean, right now, it depends really just on where you work. Because I say I'm not in a call schedule, but now I'm a one-man show. And so I'm essentially on call all the time. Mm-hmm. If I am out of town like I am now, I will probably reach out to somebody and say, hey, in the event that one of my cases comes, would you mind covering? And the majority of times there's not a problem. But depending on what type of project or program you're part, there's going to be, you know, the necessity to do it or not to do it. And it becomes somewhat of a camaraderie, I think, mm-hmm. right? I, you know, one of the things that I really liked when I took call at Baylor before I had my kid, was that being the guy that didn't have a kid, I would love to take Christmas because I felt it was such a special thing for other people to enjoy that call for me. There was a weird pleasure in being able to be the guy that took the call that nobody wanted to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I feel it always made me like, you know, it gave me like colleague points, you know, and you can cash those colleague points at any point in time. Yeah. So I remember being the one that was like, listen, Thanksgiving, I don't even celebrate that. I'm Costa Rican. I have no idea what that is. Put me on. Christmas, I'm fine. I don't have a kid.
Yeah.
And so people really worked with me when I needed coverage because they knew I always took this this horrible call. Yeah. Is that something that you guys do? Like, how do you partition that call and who gets to do what? And
we divide it equally. We kind of just say, hey, like, oh, I don't have a kid. So I, you know,
so those moments. So you're the Christmas guy?
So I'm the Christmas guy.
Anybody that has a cactus for a Christmas tree should take call. Yeah. You Grinch.
I like cactuses, bro.
It's an old story, Vanita, you don't want to hear. Yeah. Like, he doesn't believe on Christmas trees as an enigmatic part of Christmas.
I just don't want the thing to die. So I keep a cactus. It stays alive. I can't kill it. And then I just put Christmas lights on it. It's fine.
You're a hippie. It's fine. How do you guys manage it, Benita? How do you divide it? Is there some hierarchy? Is it a fair thing? Is there somebody that, oh, there's the other thing of somebody that likes to do the call schedule because they know they have so much power.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I think it can be so different in the different environments, but yeah, we split it evenly. There are a couple of our senior colleagues who sort of have aged out of call. We have a policy. There's an age where you can say no thank you to call. And so they've aged out of call. Otherwise, we do it evenly and sort of everyone has to do a holiday weekend a year sort of thing. But, you know, I think that graciousness that you mentioned of like, yeah, sure, I'll cover you for this. It's not an issue for me. I mean, you know, my kids are now 10 or actually almost 11 and 14. And so now I have like yesterday, last night was playoff championships for Sony's basketball game and like tournaments that we were traveling here and there. So my like life and life needs are really different. And I have amazing colleagues that are like, sure, I got you. I covered you. I'll finish this. You go, you catch that game, you go to that tournament. So, you know, it's nice when you have that kind of relationship. And fortunately I do.
Yeah.
Do you only take call at one facility or do you guys have to cover multiple?
We cover two hospitals on weekend call. On weekday call, it's just.
How about you guys?
I cover three hospitals right now. It's going to be four soon.
Do you have call pay?
No.
No call pay?
No call pay.
Is this stipulated in your contract? This is something that always drives me nuts. Because like we're taking this, we're out there, we're working, we can't enjoy ourselves. We put time away.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if you don't operate, there's no RVUs coming in the door. So it's essentially you just screwed one day of your life waiting for something to happen that never happened, but yet nobody pays you for doing that.
I still book cases on my call. I take a whole call week and I take 7 days straight.
You don't book anything during the day?
No,
like you
can't? I do book, okay, but I'm on call. So if something happens, I just have to manage.
What do you guys do? Do you guys get call pay?
And actually, I'm glad you brought that up because especially like three hospitals, like how do you even manage? I mean, you know, people that have four or five hospitals, how is that even, you just like send them to one hospital?
It depends. Like we are really good at kind of, you know, having backup and we have a backup call. So fortunately, it's seldom that it's happened where you're getting called from two different places, but at that point we kind of rally the troops and we divide and conquer. It's been working really well, but yeah, I mean, you could see where there could be problems. I think, you know, you need to have a lot of cohesion, and a lot of willingness to, you're not on call, but you can, you know, you take care of it. So we fortunately have that and it's been working well, but I could see where if you don't have that cohesion, then it's a disaster.
Well, I remember starting a little bit of a strike.
So yeah, how did you manage
in that? My country, we strike, you know, doctors go on strike in Costa Rica when shit's not okay.
Yeah.
And I caught wind that there were surgeons that were getting paid for call.
Wow.
And somehow it had escaped our leadership that we were not being paid for call, or that we didn't have to. And so I essentially said, as of this date, I am on call for my patients only, but I will not come to the hospital for any other reason.
Was that in your contract?
No, there was nothing in the contract that said that.
So
I
how could, why couldn't they just say, okay, goodbye?
So that's what they said. I mean, they didn't want to do anything. And then that made, there's another guy in the group that decided to join me. And then two other guys started taking all the call.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing was just a huge mess. And then it took a month and all of a sudden we were getting paid. Now, I then was faced with the fact that there's a dean's tax that I wasn't expecting. And so on top of the fact that I wasn't making that much money, I mean, I finally got them to pay us call. So that was a huge win.
Yeah.
But then 40% of that went to the college unexplained reasons. And so anyway,
you got the hospital to pay for a call and then, but then the university took the dean's tax. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Like more free work. Like she cannot comprehend how much we do for so little.
Yeah.
That's so smart.
We do a lot of free work, right? I mean, all of the planning, a lot of the conversations, a lot of the administrative time, We're in a very, very strange, archaic business model. And on top of that, whenever you do get paid, it takes a lot of time for it to come in through the door. And that's something that I've now realized more than before, having to deal with the companies and seeing the cash flow. It's really difficult for you to get paid for all these things, and it takes a lot of time. How do you recover from just bad call? Like what's the worst part of call? Is it the emotional drainage of knowing that call may come and the fact that you lose sleep? Because that's, I think, what killed me about call.
Mm.
It wasn't even that it was necessarily always super busy, but it was the knowing the expectation that phone may ring and I'm going to have to deal with this horrible thing. I would never sleep.
I sleep like a baby.
I sleep like a baby too. And I sleep like a baby in between, you know, like I'm waiting for them to call me back. I fall back asleep. I mean, you've got to sleep. If you sit around anticipating and can't sleep, yeah, that's a problem.
So out of a horrible week of call like you just had, is there anything that you do on the personal, you know, coping mechanisms, if you may, of what you just went through, especially on a bad call, maybe some pretty bad results? how do you take that and turn it around and get back on the horse? Like what goes through your mind, and do you do anything on the physical side, on the mental side, on the emotional side? Or is this already, are we just so automatically robotic involved in it that it's almost like it doesn't even faze us at this point? What's your thoughts?
You know, I thought about this point a lot. And I think it's a work in progress for me personally. I'll never forget one of my earlier calls as an attendee. I had a 3-year-old, and this is a while back. I
hate pediatrics call, so.
I had just gotten home, and I was like literally hugging my daughter, and I get a call like on my pager that said, come to OR10. So I'm like, honey, I gotta go. And she's like, no, mommy, don't leave me. I need you, you know? And I'm like, my heart's breaking. Like, babe, what? So I told her, I said, look, and I have to go fix it. And that kid, 3-year-old kid, let go and said, hurry, hurry, go fix the bleeding. And I thought, oh my God. So I go, it was a nightmare. Patient was like in lateral decubitus, like the plastic surgeons were debriding from the back, this like pancreatic abscess, and that literally debrided into the IVC. It was a nightmare. Anyway, we put a T-bar across it, got him off the table for then. I came home and I was exhausted and beat up, and I felt bad for leaving my kid. And my daughter was like, how was it? Is he okay? Does he have a mother? Does he have children? Does he like the color blue? I mean, like really suddenly made me, you know, just dive in for a minute, you know, and process and be like, who is that person as a person? I just did this thing and it was exhausting and a little scary, but I, you know, felt pretty good because, you know, stayed alive for that moment. But I hadn't really thought about that person as a person or me as a person treating them. And so that really kind of hit home. And I try to now process that, think about that. And so what I've learned to do, my way of processing it, is give myself a break from everything else for a little bit. So I don't make expectations that I'm going to cook dinner, that I'm going to write a paper, that I'm going to answer emails. I'm just going to give myself some peace time because I feel like I need that time. It's not even sleep or this or that. It's just peaceful time of not having any other expectations of myself so I can kind of think about it and process it. That's how I do it.
I think catching your habits, because we have a lot of unconscious habits that we pick up along the way. And I was having this conversation with someone. I was kind of like, really, wow, that makes a lot of sense. You know, everybody finds a way to soothe with trauma. You know, some people like, and this was a conversation with somebody that was a dietitian. You know, some people look to soothe the stresses of life with food and, you know, whatever, gummy bears or something. And the solution to that is introspection and getting that, okay, this is bad for me. This is what I do when I'm stressed. Why am I stressed? So I find myself, I don't have a TV because I find that I soothe with consumption of media, but I still have a phone. So when I get home really stressed, what I do is I don't want to, you know about anything. Is I just want to lay on my phone and look at YouTube videos about absolutely nothing that doesn't help me in whatsoever. So that kind of like thinking and I've really liked the idea, okay, what am I doing to soothe my stress and does it help me? And what can I do that makes me feel good? Because looking at YouTube videos doesn't make me feel good. It's just a way to numb. Going and grabbing my dog on a leash and going on a walk, when I come back, I feel great. So whatever that is for anyone, it's different for everyone. But I think the introspection is the same for everyone. It's okay, what habits have I picked up along the way in life that served me at a point and now don't serve me? And I think if we did more of that, we would be way happier as humans.
I mean, I find myself endlessly scrolling through Instagram.
Yeah, it's horrible for you. You feel like shit afterwards.
I'm really trying to get to the end of it. It's never there.
Yeah.
I can watch videos of pit bull puppies for hours.
Yeah.
And for some odd reason, I can't stop.
Yeah. I find the weirdest things.
I don't want to hear that. Have you ever been...
What was that, Vanita?
But is it soothing? So I guess, you know, to your point, if it's a soothing mechanism, if it's actually effective at it, it's okay. Yeah.
But right. Do you feel good afterwards? Do you feel good after strolling through Instagram? I will bet $100 that you don't.
I don't know. Miguel?
Thank you. I feel, yes, so there's guilt, because the reason why there's guilt is because I believe that I've wasted time that I could be doing, you know, that I could be talking to my wife, that I could be doing things that are probably more productive for me as a human being. My kid's usually by now asleep, because that's, so that's where there's a very, it's kind of, I'm very sorry, Jenna, for this, but there's, you know, when I come home, I essentially put my phone away, and I've got these two magical hours, like from 5 to 6:37, if I'm lucky, where that kid is just full of magic and I am all over him. And I do take dad duties seriously, man. I'm out there, I'm airplaning, I'm, you know, breaking my back, I'm running the car all over the place. Like, I'm having fun, and this kid's laughter is contagious. Yeah. And I can feel the serotonin in my body just like, but then when he's down and I feel like I've finished and I've finished my duties for that day, I sit down and I scroll. Yeah. And it's like, Jenna's there, I'm here, the TV's in the back, yeah, and we're both going like this.
I would say that that's horrible.
I know it is, but I'm sure a lot of people out there, you guys, that are, you know, young like me in your 20s, are out there probably doing that. And so I just don't know if that endless scrolling, I have to try to put a stop to it. I do believe so. I think so. And for our relationship, for my life, for whatever, but it is things that we do after these extreme nights of where you're so tired that this is as much as your body allows you to do. And so, I mean, I don't know, maybe it should be better exercise, right? Maybe it should be, I don't know, maybe it should be sex.
Yeah. That's preventing you from having an intimate relationship when you could probably have it. It's not like you're going to do a ton, you know, but
I'm not going to do a ton of sex.
Yeah. but it does prevent you from all those human interactions that make you happy. Like, I know. Because, yeah.
You know, but anyway, have you ever been, here's a interesting question about, have you ever been so tired, Vanita, that you actually slept through a call? And I'll be the first one to say,
yes,
at least twice in my life where I came back and they called me and I was just completely destroyed and I put my phone in silence.
Yeah.
And my partner then that wasn't on call had to actually, you know, he picked up the phone because the residents started calling other people, at which point was like, okay, I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah.
And they went in, it was like a pretty serious thing. And I remember feeling incredibly bad for that, but it was, you know, I don't even remember like getting back home. Mm-hmm. It was like this, one of these bypasses of 6 hours that goes down and you go back and you declot it and it goes down again on the table and you're there and you just, the whole thing just starts closing in and you've got tunnel vision. And then you finally make it home. And that day I was on call and it was something like a AAA rupture. And I never picked up the phone. Have you been in a situation like that where you've been so overwhelmed or tired that you just missed out on something that was important?
You know, I certainly have missed calls. My phone was on silence, this and that, but I haven't necessarily had that exact experience. But I'm just gonna push on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Ask you, okay, that, you know, that's kind of forgivable. Miguel, like you just were so exhausted, you didn't even realize, you put your phone down. It happens, right? What is the line there? You know, like, I'm sure we've also been so exhausted that our decision making, our choices for what we've decided we're going to do, perhaps are a little bit different than if we had a lot of energy, right? How have you been in that situation where sort of in retrospect, you're like, I was just so tired, I probably should have done this A, B, and C, and I did C, D, you know, like, and is that okay? How do we process that? How do we like that?
I don't know, because there is, I believe, this pressure on you that when you're on call, you have to fix everything. And it doesn't matter how difficult the task, you have to somehow figure it out. And what I am good at doing is when I am in a complicated position, like, the case took a turn south,
something's not working out, I have absolutely no problem calling in for help.
Yeah,
like I am very quick to say, get my phone, call, you know, this person. And now I don't necessarily have a partner within my own practice, but I know that most people would help me the way I would help them, regardless of what entity, what tax ID they work for. But what I don't think that we do enough of, Benita, to your question, is call after a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like there should be the same way they, I know this is kind of crazy and probably everybody's going to hate me for that, but the same way we do a timeout for safety, and at certain levels of radiation, we have to, you know, make a conscious, you know, the verbalize that we understand that we've gotten to certain grays and in the patient's best interest. What about after a certain amount of hours or time in a case, a surgeon is obligated to scrub out if things are stable enough to do a potty break, to call a friend, to have a discussion, or to just introspect and look at things in with fresh eyes. And I don't think that anybody has ever taught me that.
Well, you taught me that as far as like the time thing. And after you told me like some things, you know, kind of mentioning that, you know, certain things take you at a certain time, and if not, there's something going on. And I took that to heart. If I am going past a certain time, a percentage, so say, you know, a bypass instead of being, takes me like 4 hours to the bypass. If it takes me 6-7, then I'm like, at like the hour 5, I'm like, okay, what am I doing? I'm doing something wrong. And, you know, when you're exhausted, you don't see things. So then you call in a partner. If you have real confidence, then your partners come in and say, yeah, you're fucking up here. Just let me fix it. And they take it from your hands and you're like, thank you for taking this from my hands. You know, that was so painful, you know, and you're relieved. Then you sit back and you watch them operate and you're like, oh, thank God that you can see what I can't see.
What do you do, Benita?
I'm certainly quick to call for help. There's no question about that. I mean, I have FaceTimed. I've done that. But I'm also, I mean, I feel like I'm quite, you know, not infrequently, you just, but I'm going to try this and I'm going to try this now. And I'm going to keep going and keep trying and to a fault, I probably could do it better if I run out, you know, instead of just going through every algorithm and idea that I have in my mind of just pausing perhaps a little bit earlier. And actually, it's funny that you say that, Lucas, because I've heard, you know, Miguel talk and say, if this hasn't worked in this amount of time, then I stop. And I don't necessarily think I do that as well. And, you know, there's some interesting data actually about micro breaks during operating, not just for your like, you know, mental well-being and slowing you down, but physical, you know, like just the physical aspect of operating for hours and hours. And they say these little mini micro breaks where you sort of stand up and like stretch your back or do a, you know, whatever adjustment can be really life-changing too. I don't do those. I know both are good for me, but I don't do them very well. I just get absorbed in the operating room. It's a problem.
The ascending reticular system is essentially made for that, right? It's an awareness component that you activate. Mm-hmm. And when you're concentrated and focused and hyper-focused on cases, you lose a lot of degree of attention. And so it's not a bad idea. Like this is something I do, and I don't necessarily think I teach it. But I say, oh, I think my glove opened up, as if I needed an excuse, right?
Yeah,
like nobody cares if I say I'm going to scrub out.
Take a break.
But I'm like,
yeah.
And so I'll scrub out if everything's stable, of course, right? Yeah. You don't need somebody dying on the table, but I'll scrub out. I'll go and walk. I'll go and do a potty break. Yeah. Maybe I'll even have a Coke and then come back to the room.
Yeah,
and it does help you out a lot when you feel that you are being quick to take decisions that are maybe not in the best interest of the patient, and you find yourself maybe cutting corners because you're tired and you're not doing that, you know, you're not putting the stitch the way it should be put. I do find myself doing that. And I think that we should be better at doing that. Benita, it seems like there's a lot of self-reflection here that you should start taking a little bit more breaks. You're like very gung-ho when you're in that OR, aren't you?
I guess I am. You know, I do realize that I tend to be a bit singularly focused on the end goal. I remember it's definitely a personal flaw, because I remember taking like one computer science class in college. I don't know why. And you know, computer science programming is like problems, like problem solving, you know. I sat down, I had this like final project, and I remember sitting down working on this computer science final project, didn't eat breakfast, didn't eat lunch, didn't go to the bathroom, didn't drink water, like like dark. And I'm like, what have I done? Like, what is wrong with me? So I definitely, to a unhealthy degree, can like hyper focus. And so this is good. I'm getting a lot out of this. I'm going to re-engage trying to do those micro breaks.
Let me ask you a question. Where do you think, because we, I don't know, you probably had this where you come up with a problem and you come up with like a, you say to yourself, oh, that's a really smart solution I just came up with. And, you know, for any, you know, you're doing a complex, like, whatever, leg. Where do you think that comes from, that idea? That maybe, you have a problem.
Come up with a great idea and you're like, where does it come from?
Yeah, like, where does that idea come from?
I don't know.
Where do you think it comes from?
I don't know. We got to get on the Hubert podcast and maybe he could answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Neurobiologically, some, I don't know.
Yeah.
Imagination?
What part of the brain, I guess?
No. Well, I don't know. Could be that part of the brain.
What
part
of, like, you're the professor of neuro.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
And invite me.
Oh, Vanita, you had a really rough week. And when you look back on it, we're getting close to the amount of time that we asked you to carve for us. But looking back and having now had this kind of discussion about the way that we manage ourselves during call, it was a rough week. You were on call. You were probably taking some pretty tough decisions. Had the faith of a lot of your patients in your hands. Looking back at this 1 week alone and after our conversation, do you feel there's things you could have done different or that you will do different in the future?
I do. I really think I do. I think, I think probably my biggest takeaway is to sort of allow myself some time to think and process while I'm in the throes of it, just to pause for a second. That's probably my biggest takeaway. You know, it was a tough week. Like I said, it was a difficult end result in a couple of the patients. So I operated on many, many, many in those days. But I also, you know, like I also continue to take pride in what we do and enjoy my job. It hasn't gotten to, you know, it's not to the point where it has gotten to the point where I'm like, I just can't take this anymore, thankfully. Maybe it's because I still have some habits, or I've developed some habits of, you know, processing and recovering, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, when I came home from the not call, not seeing my kids for dinner, et cetera, like everyone had already gone to bed, there was a little care package on my bed from my daughters. I mean, it's just going to like, just tugs it like with a little Stanley of cold water and like their softest, like pajamas and some snacks and a note, we love you, and a blankie and their favorite stuffed animal. I mean, it was like so sweet. So, you know, at the end of the day, it was exhausting, but also worth it. You know, hopefully we, you know, I made some impact on some people. But yeah, you can always grow and learn. I learned a lot from you guys. I'm going to do my little breaks. I'm going to tear a hole.
I'm going to steal that trick, by the way.
What do you think call is going to be like for these newer generations?
It's going to be like what trauma ACS does.
Like what?
What trauma and ACS does. We're going to probably follow the trauma ACS model. Which is, you know, 8 people, 1 hospital, and, you know, sign offs every day. And then you go home and you just cover the day. That's probably what it's going to be.
Mm. I'm not sure that works for vascular, though.
Why not?
Because I don't know. I think there's a really strong component of longitudinal care in what we do that supersedes this nature of just very acute care.
Yeah.
It's the primary reason why I felt that being in a hospital, I was underserving my community.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I don't think it's the best model. I just think that's what's going to happen.
I think what helps my patient. I'm sorry, because
go for it, Vinita. When we're talking, our microphones somehow mute you, and then we don't hear when you start talking. Sorry, what were you saying?
I actually think it's going to be the opposite. I think the younger generation are going to do a better job of sort of taking a team approach to this, helping each other out, coming in, whether or not you're asking for help, looking out for each other. I mean, I'm seeing it in my residents, the way they back each other up, tap each other out, that mentality of like, it's gotta be me and I could do everything and I'm never going to leave the hospital is gone. And that's a good thing. Instead, it's, we're going to get through this together. We're going to do the right thing. Let me come help you. I actually think, I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with the ACS model, but I kind of agree with Miguel that it maybe doesn't work for vascular surgery. I think they're going to figure it out and do it better than we do.
Do you think it's okay for a resident in the middle of a case to tap another resident out?
No.
So that they can go home and not finish the case they started?
No, I don't.
Vinita, what do you think about that?
Unless they need to go pick up their kids or something like that. Yeah.
In the appropriate scenario, it sounds terrible, but like in some scenarios, if that resident is so exhausted they can't, in a situation where there's, you know, an understanding of the case, et cetera, I think it's not unreasonable.
I think we still have a huge we still have a lot of work to do in understanding what empathy is as surgeons and how to be empathetic not only to ourselves but to others in this career, and to understand that not everybody has to live at the intensity at which we have chosen to live, and to not use that against them. Because I personally have had that situation where somebody scrubs out and I didn't quite like it, but at the same time, I didn't feel empowered to have an actual strong stance against it. Because maybe for that person, that makes total sense. And I just don't know. I don't know what the right answer is to that question. It seems.
I think like ultimately across the board, like ultimate responsibility probably causes the most benefit to the people we're treating, having the mindset of, and yeah, and sometimes you choose things. So sometimes you have to know what you're choosing. So if you choose to be a surgeon, you choose to, you know, you have to go into things knowing yourself. And some things are, you know, built in, baked in. You wouldn't say to like a special forces person, oh yeah, you know, tap out, get out of the mountain of Afghanistan and go like have a, you know, a little smoothie or something, you know. And it's not the same. It's not, I'm not saying that that's it, but there's a nature to what we do, and you have to know what it is. And if it's for you, it's for you. If it isn't, you know, it's fine.
Well, listen, like at any bar, sit down, it's always hard to ask for the last drink, because we could probably go on for hours and hours and change this now into trainees and training paradigms and where to go. Maybe we'll have you. Hopefully we can have you on the show another time. And as you saw, it really is just us spitballing, talking shit about it.
But this was great. I loved it.
I love these things. And people, like, you know, you're in the car, you're going to work, you tune into three people that you really like or dislike. I don't know. I hope that more people than I'll take that back. I don't really care if anybody likes me or not. But I think people will tune in and listen.
Hopefully
and,
they like the conversation.
But anyway, Vinita, wish you the best of lucks. I would
skiing.
Say break a leg, but I really don't want you to break a leg in the slopes. Enjoy yourself, disconnect, forget about this podcast, and have a lot of fun.
So much fun. I'll be back anytime you want it. I'd hang out with you guys and the podcast or at a bar any day.
Awesome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.